Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, you are back right here at the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. I'm joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer, and you, of course, and it's so good to have you back as we go right to the headlines right off the top. I could not resist this story. This is from Breitbart. They have reported that former New England Patriots star tight end Rob Gronkowski has made his initial appearance at WrestleMania. Yes, I said WrestleMania. That's WWE. That's the World Wrestling Entertainment. Yes.
The real wrestling.
I think it is a bit of poetic justice. In fact, this comes from the poetic justice file as Rob Gronkowski officially files the end of his generally ignominious football career and begins his much longer career as a laughable clown. Yes. Meanwhile, Tim Tebow is being paid to play a real sport. Still. We will keep tabs on how far down into the world of carnies and clowns Gronkowski sinks, and we will take some measure of pleasure in watching him as he flails about in the swirling, sucking eddy of despair that will become. Well, no, we wish him the best. We don't. We want to wish him the best. Let's just leave it at that. Rob Gronkowski, get out of here with that chump. So we'll just set that right aside, file that back in the poetic justice file, and move right on to politics. As we know, that's why you tuned in. You're waiting for a big report on the big shakeup at the top in the White House amongst the executive advisors. But we're going to first start, and we'll get to that. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. Now that the presidency has devolved into a reality television broadcast, every night now, even on the local news, they have a segment called The Trump Presidency. It might as well be a reality show. And we will get to some of that possibly, but let's start in the Philippines, where the Associated Press is reporting that the Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte is being criticized because he has publicly defended the adultery of one of his political allies. Duterte said in a speech that the Speaker of the Philippine House, like himself, has had, quote, many wives, unquote. And Duterte goes on to say, who among you here does not have a mistress, please? He added that the adultery of his political ally is a non-issue. Following the advice of Bill Clinton's advisors throughout the 1990s. He's got his public life. He's got his private foibles. You'll all remember that Duterte, he won in a landslide. In 2016, he was elected as president of the Philippines on a promise to kill tens of thousands of drug dealers and other criminals. And, we're not fans here at the Weekly Worldview. We're not fans. I always knew there was something I didn't like about this guy besides the extrajudicial killings. I'm not a fan of that. But he has openly boasted about having mistresses and, other things that I can't really talk about here. It's a family show. Generally, we don't. We'll just leave that aside. That's the politics file from the Philippines. And now, let's go. This is a sad, sad story and a personally devastating story for me because of my history. And it comes to us from the Queering of America file. People magazine broke the story this past week that Barry Manilow, now 73 years old, has come out as a homosexual.
Copacabana.
What, you heard Copacabana and you always add your suspicions? Is that? I don't know how much detail I want to go into. Anyway, Barry Manilow married his high school sweetheart. Now, picture a young Doug McBurney, circa 1975, 6, 7-ish, somewhere around there. I was 8 or 9 years old when Mandy was the number one song in the world, I think. And my mother brought home a Barry Manilow record, and it was a vinyl record, by the way. A 78 RPM LP, a long playing record is what we called that. And I think I listened to that record 1,000 times between the ages of 9 and 11. And Barry Manilow taught me how to sing. My brother and I, we had Barry Manilow on an LP, and we had the Platters on a long playing 78. And my brother and I would sit and sing along to Barry Manilow and the Platters. And that was when I realized that I could sing and that almost everyone else I knew could not. And it's been a burden to bear my entire life. My brother and I had a falling out after that. And we did recover years. It took many years, though, to get over the rift that was caused when I told my brother, "You're off key." And, well, he didn't like hearing that. But my brother excelled in many other wonderful things, and so it wasn't that big of a deal. But what was a big deal in our young lives was Barry Manilow. We loved Barry Manilow. Okay. We were just a couple of stupid kids. We didn't know anything. And as far as I knew, he had married his high school sweetheart. That was what I had heard. Well, it turns out he married his high school sweetheart, he became successful, and then became a homo. And I guess he's been a homo ever since. And he's allegedly married to a guy named Gary. Gary Manilow? Gary and Barry Manilow. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Gary and Barry Manilow. Anyway, I was devastated by the story. Not that I hadn't had my suspicions over the years, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not a complete prude, but it's just you're 73 years old, Barry. We don't really need to even hear about that, for crying out loud. Can't you let us just live with you as you were? Just a talented singer and songwriter? No, you have to come out as a flaming homosexual, open and public in front of God and everybody. And just wreaking havoc on my adult psyche, now having to wrestle with all the things I went through in my teenage years and wondering if Barry Manilow's perversion didn't have something to do. Well, it probably didn't, but still, I just didn't need to hear that, okay? And I would have put the song Mandy in the top 10 greatest songs ever written and performed in the history of mankind. That's the level of esteem to which I held that song and Mr. Manilow. And now he comes out as a flaming, raging homosexual. He has aligned with the enemy now. And it's a shame, if nothing else. And it's sad for Barry that he's been seduced by the modern homosexualist movement, who insists that in order to achieve real success and to be considered a true humanitarian, you have to be a fag. Barry, it's just not true. And, we just didn't need to know that. Okay, I have to move on. Before the struggles of my teenage psyche start to spill out here on the broadcast, and nobody needs to hear all that. Let's go instead to the culture file, where we have an uplifting story from St. Louis today. Six steers. That's bulls. That's cattle. Well, I don't know if they were bulls, but they were cows. Are cows bulls, or are they all?
Yeah. Oh, no. Cow is a female.
Cow's a female? Okay, let's just stick with steers. The writers at St. Louis Today were on the right track. Six steers who ran amok in the streets of St. Louis last week after escaping from a slaughterhouse, including the infamous steer Chico, who dodged police on national television during a dramatic five-hour bid for freedom, including a crash through an iron fence. Go, Chico! Well, all six of the steers, including Chico, were taken to an area farm after they were captured by authorities. And they will stay at that farm for the next week or two before making the trip to an animal sanctuary. Indeed, Chico and his compatriots have secured their freedom. They will be living out their lives in an animal sanctuary when I, in my extremely attractive audio engineer, saw the video. She wanted them here. She said, I'll take those cows. They could bring them here and they could stay. Yes. So that's just, and why does that come from the culture file? Only in America, a country that is so rich and so blessed by the living God, could six steers secure their freedom in such fashion. Well, maybe not only in America, but only in the civilized Western world. And we're just thankful that we live in a country that's so rich that six steers here and there, if they make a good run for it, well, they end up in an animal sanctuary. I think it's just nice, that's all. And yes, we would have adopted those steers. Absolutely. Absolutely would have done that. Now, let's go to the complete opposite side of the universe from St. Louis and the jailbreak from Chico and the six steers, and we go to the bad religion file, where we are sad to report that about 50 people so far have been killed following two suicide bombings at Coptic Christian services in Egypt, one in Tanta outside Cairo, and another in a Christian church in Alexandria. The attacks took place on Palm Sunday when the churches were full of worshipers. The Daily Mail in London reports that ISIS claimed credit for an earlier suicide bombing at a Christian church in Cairo back in December that killed around 30 people. And it is strongly suspected that ISIS and their sympathizers are behind this attack again. I know. The mainstream media says this is not a religious war. But the people blowing up Christian churches in the name of Allah say it is. And therefore it is. Now the Pope spoke up on this. The Pope was participating in Palm Sunday services himself and made some comments on the bombing. The Pope said the following quote. I'm sorry, the Pope asked God the following quote. He asked God to convert the hearts of those who spread terror, violence, and death, and also the hearts of those who make and traffic in weapons, said the Pope. And just a note to the Pope, that's why this is in the bad religion file, by the way. It's not just the psychopathic murdering Islamists who are perpetrators of bad religion. Well, they're perpetrators of outright evil religion. The Pope, just a perpetrator of discombobulated, crackpot, sad religion, more so. But to equivocate those who spread terror with those who manufacture guns and missiles and whatnot. Well, just Pope, such equivocation before the blood is even dry on the altar is unbecoming, and it's counterproductive. While the blood is wet on the altar, Pope, is the time to call for the judgment of a righteous God to come down upon the heads of those who would kill the innocent. And if you want to pray for their hearts to be converted, please, please, just do it in private. Feeling I'm Doug McBurney. It is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back. Welcome back. We leave the terrorist environs of Egypt and come back to the west here, on the south and west side, as a matter of fact, of Chicago, where domestic terrorists of a sort are giving the Islamists a run for their money. Last week, 7 people were killed in 3 separate shootings in less than 12 hours. That was just on Thursday of last week. In the South Side neighborhood, and we have an activist there in Chicago. An activist is what he is. Not sure how he makes a living, but he's an activist. T.O. Hardiman. He's got some commentary on the bloodshed there in Chicago. He has some solutions, some suggestions at least, as to how to quell the violence there in Chicago before it eclipses the violence in Syria, Iraq, Egypt, Sweden, London. He says that what we need to do is, manufacturers of ammunition need to make all bullets traceable. They each need to have a chip or a serial number or something like that. He's actually, he's actually behind legislation that would require ammunition manufacturers to make bullets traceable. And he also says that children in the south side of Chicago should get bulletproof vests. And he says he's not kidding about that. When he said that, people thought that was hyperbole. But no, he's actually serious. He's as serious about that as he is about the serial numbers on the bullets. And all of that, yeah. So what else do we have? There has been a heavy police presence in the neighborhood I just mentioned where the 7 people were killed in less than 12 hours last Thursday. A heavy police presence, traceable bullets, bulletproof vests. These are the ideas of a twisted, demented leftist mind on how to reduce violence. When anyone with half a brain paying attention to anything for the last, 5,000 years or so, knows that a swift and painful death penalty instituted justly by the government for capital crimes is the most effective way to deter violence. And yet we're distracted by traceable bullets and, what else? Traceable bullets. Oh, bulletproof vests. Yes. Oh, and the heavy police presence that the activists seem to enjoy so much. They're always marching in the streets, talking about the police, and then their communities are ripped to shreds by violent gang members, drug dealers, and other assorted nefarious types. And yet they will not endorse actual justice. And that takes us to the justice file. That Chicago story, that was from the Domestic Tranquility file. It's in the Declaration of Independence, Domestic Tranquility, is it not? Provide for the common defense, ensure the domestic tranquility, something like that. It's a legitimate function of government to ensure domestic tranquility. And, the government is falling down on that. But in Arkansas, the governor there in Arkansas, whose name escapes me at the moment, Asa Hutchinson, he is going to give it a try, appropriately enough, starting the day after Easter. According to the LA Times, Asa Hutchinson and the state of Arkansas, at the beginning of last week, was scheduled to execute 8 men in 11 days. Yes, according to the schedule, 2 convicted murderers would die each day on April 17th, April 20th, April 24th, and April 27th, and the whole audience said, "Amen." Yes, that's what's in the plans for Arkansas, or at least that's the way it looked at the beginning of last week when I pulled this story down from the LA Times. The last time anything like this happened was when Texas executed 8 men back in May and June of 1997. Gosh, how many years ago is that? That's 20 years ago since we've had a run of justice that was anything comparable to what they are about to attempt in Arkansas. Starting the day after Resurrection Sunday, they will start introducing convicted murderers to the man who rose from the dead. How appropriate is that? I think it's a fine way to start the season following Easter. Start introducing capital criminals to Jesus Christ in person. Well, death penalty opponents, as you can imagine, are quite upset. They say so many executions increases the likelihood of mistakes that could cause needless suffering by the inmates. Needless suffering? You mean like the suffering they inflicted on their victims, perhaps? Is that what you're talking about, Mr. ACLU lawyer? They go on and on about the drugs and the concoction and the chance that he might breathe and huff and he might drool and there could be bubbles and we could hear noises that could be troublesome because since we went to law school, we never heard anything like this. It's just terrible. We have, we have Rita. Rita from the American Civil Liberties Union. Rita is a lawyer from the American Civil Liberties Union. She chimes in, "This is a ghastly assembly line of death. It does not comport with human decency." At which point someone said, "Is that a New York accent? I thought you were with the Arkansas American Civil Liberties Union." Anyway, let's just leave that. That's what Rita says. It's a ghastly assembly line of death. Let's see. And there are others, other nonprofit types like the Arkansas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty have been holding vigils outside the governor's mansion, burning candles, chanting, holding hands. Last month, two dozen former corrections officers sent a letter to the governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, urging him to consider the strain and stress that 8 executions will place on correction staff. So there's another angle they're hitting the governor with. You're going to stress out the corrections officers who have to carry out these ghastly assembly line of death. And I think this is a commentary on the state of just manhood in America and in the West in general. Because in my circle, any one of the red-blooded American men that I hang out with regularly, confer with, talk with, I ask their advice, we help each other out. Any one of those red-blooded American men, upon hearing the stories of any one of these convicted capital criminals, would want to kill these bastards with their own hands. They would volunteer to participate in the ghastly assembly line of death if it makes other people squeamish. And for crying out loud, if we could take the stress off the corrections officers, we would be happy to do so. And if that's not the way it is any longer for a majority or even a significant plurality of modern American men, if that's not the way it is, if you don't hear the story, I could read you the stories of what some of these pieces of garbage did to innocent women and children and men. I could read you these stories. And if you don't want to kill him with your bare hands, then... Well, you're less than a man, that's all. And if that's the way it is, then all is lost. Western civilization will be circling the drain because nobody understands justice any longer. And justice makes people squeamish. And it's just a sad commentary on the state of affairs. Now, I have an update on that story because that was April 3rd. By April 7th, a lawyer in a robe issued an order, blocking one of the 8 executions because the lawyer determined that the parole board would probably recommend commuting that particular inmate's sentence to life. That life, by the way, is the option that this particular capital criminal did not extend to his victim. He did not extend them the option between life and death. But a group of lawyers in the government and the justice system of Arkansas, or I should say the parole board, are going to extend that option to one of the murderers. And so one of them is off, at least at last report. And listen to what Asa Hutchinson says. In true slope-shouldered, rhino Republican, mush-mouth, jelly-spine tradition, Asa Hutchinson says of the now seven executions in 11 days, Asa says, it's not my choice. I would love to have those executions extended over a period of multiple months and years, but that's not the circumstance that I find myself in. And so it gives him the willies to execute justice on those who murdered the citizens who elected him to ensure justice. Or, well, I guess their families did. Most of these guys have been on death row since Asa Hutchinson was in high school or college, maybe law school. Is Hutchinson a lawyer? Sounds like a lawyer. I don't know much about the guy. And then this article here is from the Washington Post. They go on and on about how scary it is, this combination of drugs. Some of the drugs could be expired, and we all know how critical that could be when you're trying to kill someone and you give them an expired drug that could, it could lead to an infection.
It could kill him
for crying out loud. Anyway, a swift and painful death penalty is the best deterrent against those who would ponder in their dark little hearts that they might want to try to kill another person. But that's just not where we are anymore. And Asa Hutchinson is a fine, squishy example of American manhood circa 2017. And it's just sad. And because our justice system has allowed murderers, some of the coldest-blooded, vicious, evil people on the planet, because our justice system has tolerated them and allowed them to live and not executed them and even converted their sentences to life in prison, the average murderous heart, and there are murderous hearts out there, I would venture to say that every single one of us at some point in our lives has been tempted to kill another person. And it's the general environment of justice that helps when it crosses your mind that maybe you want to hurt or kill another person. If it crosses your mind that there's a good chance that you yourself will be hurt and killed painfully, well, that would at least give you pause. But here in America now, let's go to Zebulon, North Carolina. And this is from last month. I hadn't been able to get to this story, but in Zebulon, North Carolina, a teenager decapitated his mother, Oliver Mauricio Funes Machado, 18-year-old teenager. He's been charged with first-degree murder. The first policeman on the scene, the kid called 911 and said that he had killed his mother. The first deputy on the scene found Oliver walking out to greet him with his mother's head in one hand and a large butcher knife in the other hand. The kid said that he killed his mother because he felt like it. The incident took place in broad daylight at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Mother's head in one hand, a butcher knife in the other. See, had this 18-year-old been given just some pause to consider the fact that if he hurt his mother, he might himself be hurt or killed, well, perhaps things would be different in Zebulon, North Carolina, but that's where they are at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday. right here, the fastest streaming podcasts in America, depending on your ISP's download speeds. Welcome back. Yes, and that last bump, of course, begs the question, whatever happened to Ronnie Montrose? Whatever happened? We'll have to look him up. Currently residing in the Where Are They Now file.
No, that's just the Sammy Hayes.
Well, I know, but that was... That's what makes it humorous.
Okay?
See, if you have to explain the joke,
it sorry.
just doesn't... Now, I want to... should I do this? Let's do a quick... this is a really, really cool story from our science file. Dateline Philadelphia, CBS in Philadelphia reported last, let's see now, this is from last month as well. Another story that I've been saving until I needed an uplifting moment. Children's Hospital of Philadelphia participated in a historic surgical procedure to save an unborn baby named Juan. His mom and dad were from Uruguay, and Juan had he had a type of tumor in his heart that is usually a fatal condition. So mom and dad beat a path from Uruguay, not to Cuba, not to Moscow, not to London or Europe or Canada or China or anywhere else. They went to Philadelphia, where a rare pericardial teratoma was treated with an incredible fetal open heart surgery. I'm sorry, I don't know if it's open heart. It's kind of hard to describe. Fetal surgery inside the womb on a tumor on the baby's heart. The family raced to Philadelphia because, of course, Obamacare grants free health care to all. No, that's not why they went to Philadelphia. They went to Philadelphia because this is America, a nation so blessed by the living God, blessed beyond what we deserve, that we have doctors that can operate on the heart of a baby in the womb. I'm sorry. Operate on the alleged heart of a product of conception in the womb. The product of conception's name was Juan, though, and the reporters at CBS in Philadelphia called Juan an unborn baby. And by the way, Juan is recovering well.
It's a boy.
Yes. Well, we have to clarify that anymore. Baby, at least
no,
for now.
Juan. Yeah.
Juan. At least at the moment, his parents claim that the child is a boy. Juan, of course, will be given the option of choosing later on. anyway, just an amazing story. I'll post a link to it. You've got to read the details. It's almost inexplicable how this could be done without killing both patients. By the way, the doctors they refer to both patients in the surgery, because as you're operating on Juan, you have to worry about mom, and you have to keep mom alive. Cecilia Sella. That was mom. Anyway, just fantastic. Kudos to Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for just lifting our spirits and giving us some hope as we, now we go to the, do I even want to go to the politics? I don't even want to go there, but I suppose I have to. Trump struck Syria this past week. 59 Tomahawk missiles destroyed Shayarat airfield, where an alleged sarin gas attack was carried out. And, of course, Donald Trump. Now, listen to what Donald Trump says. Well, wait, before I get to this, let me paint a picture for you. Come with me now of I and my extremely attractive audio engineer. I had finished a long day of work. I hadn't paid attention to anything in the news all day, and got home and found out that the United States had launched Tomahawk missiles against targets in the Middle East. So I turn on the television, and what do I find? Wall-to-wall fags everywhere I turned. I go to Fox News, you got Shep Smith lisping out the story. I couldn't take it. I had to turn over to CNN. Who do I have there? Don Lemon. The lemon-scented reporter, yes. At least he doesn't lisp. And by the way, have you noticed that Shep Smith's lisp has become a lot more exaggerated since he came out as a flaming, raging homosexual? Have you noticed that the lisp is really sharp and cutting? They almost have to de-ess it in the studio as he announces 59 Tomahawk missiles launched into diphtheria. Shep Smith, I wanted to throw up. I had to go to RT. It was the only station without a fag announcing the America's attack on Syria. That's, well, just a commentary on the state of things. We don't have MSNBC here in the house for fear the kids could see it by accident. We don't even have that. We should probably block Fox. That'll be next. Fox will go. I'll probably keep RT and get rid of Fox and CNN. Anyway, but you've all heard the story, Donald Trump. Here's the quote from your president and mine. He says that the alleged sarin gas attack allegedly carried out by Syria, he says that attack crossed many, many lines, beyond a red line, many, many lines, said Donald Trump. In his inimitable genius way, he just repeated himself and said something virtually meaningless. Many, many lines, beyond a red line, many, many lines. The attack on children yesterday in Syria had a big impact on me. Big impact. Did I say big? By the way, it was a big impact that it had on me. It doesn't get any worse than that. Assad choked out the lives of helpless men, women, and children. Even beautiful babies were cruelly murdered in this barbaric attack. No child of God should ever suffer such horror. Unquote. Donald Trump. See, now I had something written here that I was going to say about Donald Trump or to Donald Trump. Something I was going to call Donald Trump. Let's just say it was the along the lines of DJT. I have DJT, you, and then I had three other initials, but then I'm not going to say it, okay? I'm just not. But I want to let you know how I feel about Donald Trump having the audacity to refer to beautiful babies and children of God, and how that has a big, big impact on him. Big. I think he said it was a big impact. Let me go to the back to the store. Oh, he said a big impact on me. Big impact. Donald J. Trump. All right. So, what does Donald Trump do for innocent, beautiful babies murdered by chemical weapons? Well, here, well, let's see. We have a report from Breitbart. The Unpopulation Fund is allegedly going to lose about $30 million in funding from the 2017 budget, according to the State Department, with funds shifted to similar programs at the USAID. The Unpopulation Fund is allegedly to be defunded, and the money is to be shifted to other similar agencies at the AID. Breitbart reports that the Unpopulation Fund has typically been cut off by Republican presidents and then restored when Democrats control the White House. So here's how much Donald Trump actually cares about beautiful babies and children of God. He just participates in the quadrennial shell game when a Republican comes to shift money around here and there to make it look like he cares about abortion. But he doesn't care. In fact, he's a hypocrite and a liar. He's disingenuous. And if he actually cared about beautiful babies being killed by chemical weapons, he would, he could do an awful lot more. I give him zero credit, by the way, for defunding the Unpopulation Fund, because he's going to shift the money over to the AID, where a bunch of NGO types will find ways to choke off the posterity of third world families for the next 4 years, even by abortion. Anyway, this is the typical pro-life, pro-choice industry shell game. Every few years, they shift the money around, send out the fundraising letters. I care about abortion. I care about beautiful babies. Has a big impact. Big, 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 big impact. Yeah. So Trump gets zero credit for doing anything to stop the murder of beautiful children because he's done nothing. And the by the way, the top, not Tomahawk missiles. What were they? What kind of missiles were they? Yes, Tomahawks. I was somewhat. I'm not sure how to take the thing about Bashar al-Assad and his military is that there hasn't been a day gone by since Bashar was in junior high school that him and his military didn't deserve to be bombed. There hasn't been a single day. But it just seems to me that Donald Trump is just not the guy that he claimed to be during the election. That's all. And I was very disappointed, by the way, that Trump did not bomb some al-Nusra positions before morning. I watched the news late into the night to see if Donald Trump would bomb not only Assad, but also bomb the Islamists there that same night in order to make a statement. He did not. Which tells me that Donald Trump is closer and closer to the inevitable Fidel Castro flip. It's going to happen. All of you who voted for him, I want you to put your seatbelt on and just be prepared when Donald Trump comes out as a Democrat. It's just a matter of time. His whole family is Democrats, and he hired them all to work in the White House. His daughter is a froth-at-the-mouth pro-abort leftist. And she's married to a similar Democrat leftist. And they're pretty much running the show at this point. And so just be prepared. All of you suckers who voted for Donald Trump, all of you dearly beloved brothers and sisters who were bamboozled by this strip club operator from Queens who for some reason you thought was going to come in as God's candidate and do something great for all that is good and just and right in the world, put on your seatbelts because there's about to be a major whiplash event in your life. And it's going to be the morning you wake up and you look in the mirror and you rinse off the sleep from your eyes and you realize that you just elected a Democrat president. That's right. I said he's a Democrat and that you're a bunch of suckers, but we love you anyways. And when you realize and you say you're sorry you were wrong, and we should have known, Doug, all along that you were right. Well, we'll welcome you back into the fold. In fact, I'm not even going to ask for a public apology. I'm no mea culpas here. Just you call me in private. All right. Meanwhile, the queering of America continues. We have a story here from the New York Post. Let's see. Corey is a 15-year-old boy, and his, let's see. This gets very confusing. Well, basically, a mother and son are becoming father and daughter in Detroit. Corey, 15-year-old boy, first told his parents that he identified as a girl about 4 years ago. So now, he and his mother, who's also struggled with gender identity, the pair are now in transition together, and they want to be in the newspaper, so they gave an interview. So not only are they mentally deranged freaks of nature, participating in self-mutilation, but they want to do an interview and be in the New York Post, and here they are. The young teenager, who is a boy, he's chronicling the transition of him and his mom on Instagram in living color with pictures. Mom says she was emboldened by, listen to this. His mom says she was emboldened by his daughter's decision. Okay, just try to figure that one out. It starts out, it was a mom and a son. But now mom says he is emboldened by his daughter's decision. Mom has undergone a double mastectomy. I wonder if they put that on Instagram. That's kind of disgusting. Anyway, she's obviously committed. Should be committed. Is committed. Well, there you have it. If you want to see what's on Instagram, there's a link in the story that I will put up. Unfortunately, I hate to do that, but there you have it. Now we go to reason number 1,104 to get or keep your children out of the government school systems from K through 12, through undergraduate, graduate, postdoctorate, all of it. Just don't take the chance. University of California, San Marcos campus is marking Gabriel for the month of April. It's a month-long campus-wide celebration of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning, and ally community. Allies. That's people who entertain the mental illness of homosexuals. They're called allies. Instead of going, oh, that's disgusting, I'm really sorry, are you getting some mental help? Are you getting some counseling, maybe some pastoral counseling? No, if you say that, you're not an ally. But if you entertain the mental derangement and illness of homosexuals, you are part of the ally community, and they're celebrating you at UC San Marcos out in California. Isn't San Marcos, wasn't that between Vista and Oceanside? Is this the same San Marcos?
San Marcos is in San Diego.
I used to drive through San Marcos all the time. I didn't notice a lot of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questing, and ally community, but that was 25 years ago. A beautiful community there in San Marcos. Unfortunately, now marred by Gabriel, the month-long campus-wide celebration of mental illness and those who participate in it. That's reason number 1,104 to keep your kids out of the junior college there at UC San Marcos. Now, we move into the Western Civilization file as we're rapidly running out of time. This always happens here on the Weekly Worldview. And I know it's for you as well. As you're listening, you're like, I can't believe this is almost over. And you're just trying to wring just a few more minutes of entertainment and enjoyment out of the show. I'm with you. I feel it. From the Western Civ file, the Wall Street Journal reports that within 20 years, more babies will be born to Muslim women than to Christian women worldwide. And that will make Islam the largest religion in the world by the end of the 21st century. Yes, Islam is already the fastest growing religion, according to the Pew Research Center. They go through the percentages here. It's all quite concerning. They say Christianity is literally dying in Europe. That's according to a lead researcher on the study. And, well, we're watching it. We're watching it happen. But not here at the Weekly Worldview. Christianity is strong and it is advancing. I and my extremely attractive audio engineer are making every effort to amplify and multiply our Christianity upon the face of the earth by focusing on our own family. That's right. The whole world can go straight to hell, as far as I'm concerned, as long as I can secure my own family. But the reason we do this show is that we actually care that the whole world is going straight to hell. But you're not invited to our house, thank you very much. No. You just keep your distance, all right? Let's see here. Do I want to do an update on this story? Do you remember the story from Berkeley where Pablo Gomez murdered Emil Inman and brutally assaulted another woman, Kiana Schmidt? Do you remember the story in Berkeley, California? Pablo Gomez Jr. was a University of California Berkeley senior majoring in Latino studies. And he was a prominent campus activist, part of the We Stand With Black Rock. Was it Black Rock? Slippery Rock? Where was that North Dakota Indian thing with the oil pipeline? We Stand With Red Rocks. No, that was a Rush tour like 6 years ago. We Stand With Red Rock. No, We Stand With Black Rock, I think is what it was called. Anyway, you all know what I'm talking about. Well, this was the young man. When Berkeley Side, the local Berkeley newspaper, reported the article, the reporter, who has a sincere concern for gender equity, decided to honor the accused murderer's desire to be referred to as they rather than he. So Pablo, after he murdered one woman, brutally assaulted another, allegedly. When he did his interview with the newspaper so he could be famous, he said he wanted to be called they rather than he, and the reporter did that. And then people freaked out and called the reporter Emily Raguso. Well, they said, well, what's your problem? Are you some kind of demented freak? Or words to that effect. I think that's what I said. And, well, the reporter, Emily Raguso, she's very upset. She said, I didn't see honoring his Mr. Gomez's pronoun preference. I didn't see that it was something that would anger anyone. And I'm very, very scared now. I feel bad. I'm feeling threatened. I need safe space. Berkeley's Gender Equity Resource Center, where Gomez was a member, declined requests to comment on the ongoing controversy, as did other gay rights activist groups in Berkeley, seeing as we've got a dead woman murdered by a flaming open homosexual and like one of their favorite people at all the parties for the last year or so. They'd just rather not talk about it. Victim Emile Inman, 27, a native of France, was found in her home in January with a We Stand With Standing Rock sign in her front window that she shared with other young roommates before she was brutally murdered, allegedly by Pablo Gomez Jr. Gomez was arrested on January 7th, accused of killing Inman and assaulting Schmidt. The judge in the case has ordered a mental evaluation for Pablo Gomez. And deputies led a kicking and screaming Gomez out of a recent courtroom appearance, apparently upset that they referred to him as a boy. For whatever good reason. There you have it. That should be reason number 1,105, by the way. That's UC Berkeley. Keep your kids out of the University of California university system, for crying out loud. Now we have another update on a story from our domestic tranquility file. You remember, we reported last week about the former teacher, 50-some-year-old teacher who kidnapped a 15-year-old high school freshman and fled. Well, his wife has filed for divorce. Let's see. The teacher is accused of absconding with 15-year-old Elizabeth Thomas. And the wife of the perpetrator, whose name I can't find, she wants a divorce. She probably doesn't want his name mentioned, and that's why she didn't even mention it in this article. She's been married to the guy for 31 years. And I'm here to tell you that if this story is brought to resolution in the light of day, we're going to find out that this husband of 31 years was into pornography. And how does a 51-year-old man end up running away with a 15-year-old girl from his high school, for crying out loud? He's into pornography. It is the widespread, ubiquitous nature of pornography that is destroying the minds of tens of millions of men in America every year. Their minds are depleted or even destroyed, and their lives and marriages and families are broken and smashed into pieces because of pornography. Pornography should be illegal. If you participate in the manufacture and distribution of pornography, upon due conviction, you should be put to death. By the way, kidnapping is a death penalty offense as well. So just not to put too fine a point on it, I just want you to know where we stand here at the Weekly Worldview. And we move from that story to an update from that story, reason number 1,103, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Elizabeth Thomas, according to crimeonline.com, was the victim of a teacher who groomed her for months before he kidnapped her. And the grooming, apparently, the teacher, by the way, was reprimanded for his behavior toward Elizabeth. They were caught in a compromising situation. And word got around the school that the teacher was reprimanded because of what he was, the way he was behaving with this 15-year-old girl. And many students and even staff members at the school placed the blame on the 15-year-old girl. In fact, the 15-year-old girl was being harassed and insulted on social media because she, quote, got the cool teacher in trouble because of what she allowed him to do to her as he was a man in authority, victimizing and taking advantage of a 15-year-old girl. They were caught. Well, I don't want to get into what they were doing. But anyway, word got around the school, and they blamed the girl. They called her all kinds of vulgar names on social media. And investigators said that even some teachers were talking about this incident where words along the lines of insulting the 15-year-old girl and blaming her for what happened were used. Even the teachers. Reason number 1,103 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. Even the teachers don't understand right from wrong. And they're all a bunch of perverts. I shouldn't say all. When I say all, I don't mean every last one. I just mean a significant plurality and possibly even a majority in the public schools today. So, for heaven's sake, keep or get your children out of the government schools for the sake of their soul and for the sake of their conscience. What else? Do I have anything else that looks interesting here? Hey, they're going to test the Hyperloop. The Hyperloop has been built. Hyperloop 1, one of 12 companies competing to make the idea a reality, have completed their Hyperloop track. It's a 500-meter-long testing tunnel in the Nevada desert near Las Vegas. And it's going to contain a near supersonic speed train. That's like 750 miles an hour train. The Hyperloop could cut the average, it could cut a 17-hour car trip down to an hour and 45 minutes on the Hyperloop if it's ever completed on its longest proposed leg from Cheyenne to Houston, Texas. Cheyenne to Houston. Man, if you're making that leg, you've got to question some decisions you've made in your life. Why am I going from Cheyenne to Houston? Why am I going from Houston to Cheyenne, and why do I need to get there in an hour and 45 minutes? No, we love Cheyenne, and we love Houston. Don't get us wrong. We're just trying to have some fun with the story in the wake of the slow-motion train wreck that is the collapse of Western civilization that we sit here and witness every week here on the Weekly Worldview, and we're thankful to our friends at Denver Bible Church and KGOV.com, and of course, American Right to Life, for reminding us that in the end, God has declared the end from the beginning, and He will have victory. And those who love Him will have victory, despite the way things look on a day-to-day basis or a week-to-week basis. There is hope in Jesus Christ. On the Hyperloop, on the other hand, Elon Musk has got to be bummed out that he comes up with this brilliant idea of the Hyperloop on the eve of the self-driving car. Who's going to want to get on a train once you have a self-driving car? Who cares if it's a 17-hour drive? You're going to want to be in your car, seeing the sights. You're not going to want to be going 700 miles an hour in a giant steel tube where you can't see anything. I mean, it looked good on paper, Elon, but I'm sorry. I'm going to take the self-driving car. That's just me. Also want to thank my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.